relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600.
Listening to America First with Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Donald J. Trump.
Thank you, and we are very excited. Our America First family gets bigger every single day. Now in Pennsylvania, I'm delighted to welcome the newest members. It's the Twin Valleys Talk Network in Milton and Lewisburg, WMLP, 1380 AM and 94.5 FM in Williamsport, WWPA 1340 AM, 101.7 FM, and WILQ HD3. My guys, welcome aboard. We are still struggling with the consequences of the Chinese flu, the Chinese virus, but we will come through the other side. In other countries, things are even more dire. Guatemala, Haiti, some of the poorest countries in the world, where there are starving children. Children such as Yolanda's family, who speaks through an interpreter to Food for the Poor. Listen to this desperate mother.
How does it make her feel when she can't feed her children?
It made me feel sad. Sometimes I get in my room by myself and I cry. I wonder how can I make their life better and have more money in order to give them food. I don't want my sons and my daughters to suffer.
If you've done okay, if you're still able to feed your family, if you're getting back to work, can I enlist you to help the most unfortunate people in our hemisphere? These starving children. Please go to sebgorka.com, S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, and click on the emergency food relief banner. Think of this, $37. You can't even get a meal for two for $37. We'll feed a child three meals a day for 6 months. You are doing God's work when you donate to Food for the Poor. You can call them as well at 855-330-HOPE. That's 855-330-4673. Or just go to my website. It's super simple. SebGorka.com, SebGorka.com, and click on the emergency food relief banner. I thank you, and the children you will be helping thank you too. He has been in the thick of it. Can you remember the phrase, hanging chads? We are 90 days away from the election. We have with us former White House press secretary, a friend of the show, a regular Fox News contributor, Ari Fleischer. Ari, welcome back to America First.
Great to be with you.
You have written a stunning piece, not simply because it's a good piece of commentary, but because of all the factual underpinning that's included in it for FoxNews.com. It's called In the 2020 Election, If States Can't Prove They Can Handle Voting by Mail, Don't Try It Now. And you paint a picture. And let me just share the picture with our listeners, and then you'll explain why it's such a dire scenario. Inspired by love and hate for President Trump, turnout increases in the election from 140 million in 2016 to more like 150 million voters. In Florida, Trump is up by 5,000 votes over Joe Biden. In Ohio, Biden is up 5,000 votes over Trump. Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Georgia are too close to call. Both candidates declare victory. Talk to us, Ari Fleischer, about why that scenario and a mass federalization of mail-in voting could lead to a disaster.
And a big disaster, real turmoil. Here's why. As much as there are things to argue about in politics, one of the reasons people love campaigns and campaign work is because it comes down to statistics. There's a realm of history. What we know in 2016 is that 33 million votes were cast by absentee. About 1% of them, some 300,000 votes, were thrown out nationally. By state, that means in Pennsylvania, some 20,000 votes were thrown out. Florida, some 17,000 votes were thrown out. Enough votes thrown out that in a close election, Sebastian, we all know how this is going to go.
Yeah,
every vote. It doesn't matter if there's no postmark. It doesn't matter if there's no signature. Every vote counts. When, can you imagine in 2020 when there's a surge of absentee ballots, even more votes get thrown out and the argument only gets bigger?
Well, I was shocked when you said that there were 33 million absentee votes just 4 years ago. And 1% doesn't sound like a great deal. But when you're talking about super tight races in key states,
exactly.
Everything can be challenged, and then you just don't have a result. And then this is the cherry on top of this particular Sunday. We have this New York primary. I think it's District 12 in New York. And we are, what, 5-6 weeks after the primary? And we still don't know if the incumbent has won. And that's a Democrat-controlled district with Democrat primary voters not knowing who is their representative.
And because New York had a 10-time increase in the number of people asking for absentee ballots, because New York sent everybody an absentee ballot application, something the state was not prepared to handle, neither was the Postal Service. No one knows who won the race. 25% of all the absentee ballots cast were thrown out because of irregularities, because they arrived too late, because they didn't have signatures. So both candidates in the Democratic primary are accusing the other of voter suppression. And, of course, now we have let every vote count when we know the Board of Elections in a Democrat county threw out 25% of the ballots. Magnify that. Make it national and make it that the end of the Trump presidency is on the line.
Yeah.
You want to tear America apart? If a state has no history, experience, or track record doing mail-in voting, do not start it this cycle. Don't do it in the middle of a pandemic. Don't do it now.
But what do you say to those who say we just can't secure the polling stations and it's dangerous in terms of the Chinese virus? What's your response to them, Ari?
There's no evidence that's true. People shop every day, Walmarts, Targets, grocery stores. It's essential. People are out there doing these activities every day. And we know from the April 7th Wisconsin primary in the thick of the pandemic, there was no uptick in the corona count in the state of Wisconsin 2 weeks after they had an in-person primary. You can vote safely. You just have to social distance.
Yeah,
it can be done. You shouldn't give in to the scaremongers who want to create mail-in voting, which is going to result in turmoil. Washington State knows how to do this. They've been doing it for almost 2 decades.
Right.
They know how to do it. They developed it in a bipartisan fashion. They've tested it. They have very few returned applications because they really track down people's addresses and they match signatures. If a state doesn't have experience, don't try to do it now. You're going to mess it up and create turmoil on election night.
You have a very clear sentence in the article, and it's up on our Twitter and Facebook posts, feeds right now. You say, in-person voting remains the best and safest way to conduct elections. However, I also draw from your piece the argument that it's a time frame issue, that it's insanity to try and do this now, 90 days before an election. Does that mean that if we had more time, you'd be okay with it? Or do you still stand by in-person voting, Ari?
Now, in-person voting is always going to be better, but there's nothing wrong with mail voting, and I don't think mail voting benefits one party or the other. I've seen no evidence of that. But what I do believe is if a state has enough time and if they work bipartisan, you can do this right. You can make it easier for people to vote and do so by mail, but you can't do it too late. And that's what's happening now. It's too late. And it's not a question of money, Sebastian. You can give these states all the money they need. They still can't get it done right. And the Postal Service can't handle it. You just can't have a tenfold volume increase without it going wrong, without ballots being lost, and without ballots not counting.
And then I have to ask you, because this is part and parcel of the response to the coronavirus, when you have the Speaker of the House trying to pack the COVID Relief Act with the federalization of things such as ballot harvesting, what's your response to that, Ari?
Terrible idea, because it flies in the face of the facts of what works. What works is states that have worked together bipartisan, and almost always it's the Secretary of State's office, and it needs to be bipartisan, that gets these things done. And it's nitty-gritty details. You cannot do it nationally. Every state is different. Every state has its own traditions and histories and abilities to work bipartisan or not work bipartisan. You can't do it nationally.
Yeah. 90 days to go. It's sheer insanity, especially in a nation where some races, pivotal races, will be neck and neck. He's former White House press secretary, Fox News contributor. He's a Yankees and a Dolphins fan, and I don't know whether his birthday has been corrected on Wikipedia, but you can follow him right now, Ari Fleischer. Thank you for doing what you do. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, live streaming on YouTube, on Facebook, available on Instagram TV, and where all good podcasts are available. And if you haven't done so already, please make today the day that you subscribe. It's free to our YouTube channel. Just look for me, Sebastian Gorka, and the America First name. It's got my photograph from our YouTube, from our Twitter feed with the blue background. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notifications bell twice, not once, because YouTube doesn't mean anything when you do it once. That's so strange. Do it twice and you will never miss a thing. Next up, Lord Conrad Black, then Selena Zito, and your calls on 833-33-GORKA. That's 833-334-6752.
George Wallace may be gone, but we can witness our federal government sending agents to use tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators.
Peaceful demonstrators suffering violence at the hands of the police in the United States. And mention the name of George Wallace, who, if memory serves, was a Democrat. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, across the nation, live streaming across the globe on YouTube with our regular Tuesday guest. He is Lord Conrad Black, historian, columnist, financier, justice reform advocate, and his most recent work is Donald J. Trump, a president like no other. Conrad, welcome back to America First.
Thank you, Sebastian.
You have a piece at American Greatness exactly on the speech that the former president gave. Give us your interpretation of his influence today in politics and 90 days before election and on the speech he gave at what was meant to be a funeral.
Well, the speech, I would say, to be fair, three-quarters of it was an eloquent tribute to the deceased, as eulogies are supposed to be. Now, I have to say in passing that I remember fairly vividly John Lewis in his early days at the Students Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and I admired him then. He was a brave young man, and he certainly was severely treated by the segregationists. So all of that I agree with. I think anyone would agree with it. I also remember him declaring that the incumbent president was an illegitimate president and making a lot of completely gratuitous and outrageous comments on him, which in my view of him slightly tarnished my recollections of him. But you know, a man only dies once and he deserves a good eulogy. And I thought three-quarters of what the president said was admirable, I mean, ex-president. But the when he took advantage of an occasion like that in Martin Luther King's old church to absolutely misrepresent current facts in a grossly partisan way, I thought it was a disgrace. I thought it was a dishonor to John Lewis, a dishonor to the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King in his own church and his father's church, Martin Luther King Sr. And it was a complete outrage. It was totally inappropriate to say that, in effect, it is a routine matter for white policemen all around America to murder black men. Is absolutely scandalous and virtually a blood libel on the majority population of the United States. Secondly, to say that federal law enforcement officials were beating up peaceful demonstrators when, in fact, what they were doing was protecting statues of great statesmen and the federal building in Portland from being burned to the ground with the employees of it inside. And to effectively legitimize rioters, many of them no better than urban terrorists and anti-white extremists, as law-seeking, law-abiding, innocent, peaceful protesters for the enactment of the founding principles of the United States. All of that is an absolute, unmitigated disgrace, especially on an occasion such as that, and coming from someone who was given the highest honor within the gift of any electorate in the world and twice chosen head of the United States.
You close your piece at American Greatness by using the adjective for the Democrat Party. You call it the Obama-Clinton-Biden Democrat Party. How influential, how significant is this speech, and what is the role, the political weight of Obama coming back onto the front of the stage so close before the election?
Well, my impression of that, and I don't want to put on the air as being an expert on the fine balance of forces and interests amongst the powers that be in the Democratic Party, but my interpretation is that his charging in like that indicates two things. One, he is, as an individual, practically taking charge of the Biden campaign. I mean, Biden himself is not making a campaign. It's being made for him by the Democratic media. But as a single individual speaking for the Democrats, the former president is taking the place of his vice president at the time, the nominee presumptive. And secondly, he is confirming that the center of the Democratic Party has moved sharply to the left. He has, in effect, taken his position and sort of hoisted his flag over the far left as a rallying point for the entire Democratic Party. It's one thing to have a freshman congresswoman like Ocasio-Cortez or a cranky old Bronx socialist who managed to get elected after, you know, 10 tries or something to the Senate from Vermont, to have them out there giving a sort of democratic Marxist line. I mean, Marxism, but continuing to propose free elections, albeit rigged by mail-in ballots and the enumeration of voters who aren't in fact citizens and that kind of thing. But it's something else for the former two-term president to come forward and say, right, never mind that just 4 years ago I left the White House and I left it to the left of center. We're hiking right out to the far left now, all of us together. Just, you know, strike the tents and move left. That is a very important statement in terms of where that party is going. And it should be a to quote the founder of that party, Mr. Jefferson, a fire bell in the night to everyone in the country considering how they're going to vote this November.
I was talking to an influential publisher who will go unnamed this morning, who said, irrespective of politics, the fact that Joe Biden repeatedly refuses to hold any events after 6 p.m., takes only a handful of staged questions, means there is a serious health issue there. Shouldn't this also be on the ballot, the question that the man who controls America's nuclear arsenals seems to have some serious health issues, Lord Black?
Well, I don't know that you can put it on the ballot, but I think it's up to all the voters, however they habitually vote or are trending and they're thinking of how to vote this year, it is up to all of them to consider whether this man has, amongst other things they should consider, whether Joe Biden has the physical and intellectual stamina to do the job. I mean, there is no one, not a soul anywhere, who doubts or disputes that it is a difficult, challenging job that requires tremendous effort and great qualities of resilience and resourcefulness. And that's essentially how people get to that position.
Yeah.
And I think it is a very legitimate question whether Joe Biden does have the stamina to do the job, even if you were minded to vote for him on the basis of what he says he will do if he is elected.
You
can't put it on the ballot, but surely it has to be in the minds of voters.
In the minds of voters, at least. We are posting the article right now on our Twitter and Facebook feeds. Follow him right now, Conrad M. Black, and check out a Donald J. Trump and a president like no other. Back with Lord Black after these messages. Families hanging white flags outside their doors as an indication they've run out of food. For families in Guatemala and the other countries food for the poor serves, COVID-19 is more than just a medical crisis. Because access to food has been cut off by the restrictions of the pandemic, even families accustomed to working hard to take care of their children today hear their children beg them for something to eat. Informal markets are shut down. Curfews are in place. Crops can't be planted, and parents can't even earn the couple of dollars a day they relied on to provide for their children. Today, I'm partnering with Food for the Poor and you to get emergency food relief into the hands of the most vulnerable, the children. Your one-time gift of $111 provides 3 children emergency food relief for the next 6 months. A one-time gift of $185 feeds 5 children for 6 months. Make your most generous gift today by calling 855-330-4673. That's 855-330-HOPE. Or you can give online at sebgorka.com. That's SEBGORKA.com by clicking the red emergency food relief banner. Make a difference for a child at sebgorka.com.
I know Sebastian well. Listen to him. He's with us.
The new copies of the updated, revised version of Donald J. Trump, a president like no other, are ready to ship. Mine will be on its way soon, allegedly. I'm very excited. Its author is Lord Conrad Black. Follow him right now on Twitter, at Conrad M. Black. Lord Black, I'm just going to escalate with 3 stories, try to illustrate, if I can, the nature of politics on the left in America. We have, you mentioned her, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who has proposed stripping all federal funding from military recruitment programs in American high schools. We have Trump, the president, this is from the Daily Wire, blamed for the violence that led to a Democrat headquarters being burned to the ground in Arizona. Now we find out the arsonist was a Democrat activist. And then lastly, just for good measure, this is hot off the presses this morning. Bob Avakian, who is the leader of the Revolutionary Communist Party USA, has endorsed Vice President Joe Biden. My question to you is the increasing radicalization of the Democrat Party in America, is it a peculiarity of recent circumstances here, or could we see this perhaps as a global trend in left-wing politics in the West?
I think more the first than the second. I don't see the extreme left making headway in the other major Western countries. They there is this somewhat worrisome process of disintegration of parties going on in Germany. But it, as far as I can see, it is not more towards the far left than towards the far right, although I think it is disturbing because it's happening at all. But it is not particularly a move to the left. The far left has been completely rejected in Britain, and it's never got anywhere in Canada, and it's never really got anywhere in Australia. In France, it's not particularly active, and the agitation against the incumbent regime is coming from the right, and not really the extreme right, but from the right and not from the left. So I think it is a peculiar American situation that can be generally traced to the fact that for the first time since Andrew Jackson, if not ever, We had a president elected 4 years ago who was running against all factions of both parties. He was running against the entire system for the last 20 years,
yes,
in the Congress and in the executive. And therefore, when he came into office, he had very few supporters, and it took him a couple of years to get real control of his own party in the Congress. But he has that now, and it was assisted, if I may say, by the retirement of the former Speaker, Paul Ryan, whom I admired in some ways, but he was very anti-Trump. And this election will be really the resolution of the question of whether Trump was a flash in the pan, or is in fact the reaffirmed will, or, you know, spear carrier for the will of the people to make a substantial change in the personnel and the policies in Washington. And so we're naturally bringing everyone identified with the former status quo out of the woodwork, including practically the entire national political media, to attack the incumbent president. It is as if they still don't accept that he was elected and are quite determined that he will not be reelected.
And in the last literally 60 seconds we have with you, Lord Black, it's clear the left still doesn't recognize the will of the people from 2016. Is there any glimmer that the American establishment right understands what happened when we chose Donald Trump?
I think there is a glimmer, yes. I think there's more than a glimmer. For example, I don't want to take liberties of mind reading or imputation of motives to people that I'm not in touch with, but the fact that the Bush family, for instance, has scrupulously abstained, especially the former president, George W. Bush, from commenting on the presidential election, indicates, I think, that a number of important elements in the establishment, the traditional establishment, are prepared to make their peace with the president. And the president, who was extremely critical of George W. Bush and somewhat critical of his father as well, and of course critical of Jeb Bush, has laid off all that. And so I think we're seeing, in the event of the reelection of the president, I think he will come back into office with much less hostility towards him than he had 4 years ago.
That's...
4 years ago, the Bush family were practically up in arms at the thought of him coming in.
No, that's a very, very interesting metric, and that's why he is our regular guest. Follow him right now, Conrad M. Black, and order your copy of the revised Donald J. Trump, A President Like No Other. Thank you, Lord Black. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, broadcasting from just outside the insalubrious swamp that is Washington, D.C., from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, if you're suffering from pain right now, please listen to me. There is a product that is drug-free and is providing pain relief to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, me included. Find out if it could work for you by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. It costs less than a dollar a day. And when you try it for those 3 weeks, I guarantee you, Dr. G's guarantee, that by the end of that time, you will know if it works for you like it works for me and so many others of your fellow Americans across the country. Go now to relieffactor.com. Don't wait any longer. You deserve to find out. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Yep.
John Lewis is lying in state in the U.S. Capitol. How do you think history will remember John Lewis?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I don't know John Lewis. He chose not to come to my inauguration. He chose. I never met John Lewis, actually. I don't believe.
Do you find him impressive?
I can't say one way or the other. I find a lot of people impressive. I find many people not impressive. But no, but I didn't.
Do you find his story impressive?
He didn't come to my inauguration. He didn't come to my State of the Union speeches. And that's okay. That's his right. And again, nobody has done more for Americans than I have.
Jonathan Swan. He's a good guy. John, if you're listening, do you find him impressive? He's dead. Why are you asking a question? Do you find him impressive? Is that a subtle form of baiting the president? We're talking about the same individual who stated the president of the United States is illegitimate. Is that an impressive statement, Jonathan Swan? Oh, dear. The number here is 833-33-GORKA, 833-334-6752. Somebody is worried in Arizona. His name is Dave. Dave, welcome to America First.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Dr. Gorka.
Of course.
Yeah, I can't see a way after the election, no matter how it goes, that the Democrats don't continue to enable the Marxists. They've really given them all the rope they can. And I think that the Constitution really binds us, patriots, true patriots, to put down whatever insurrection they think that they're going to hold. I think it's our...
Hello, we're breaking up. Are you still there, Dave?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. Well, hang on a second. First things first, it's not our responsibility to put down an insurrection. That is the responsibility of the federal forces and local public safety. If those fail, then yes, we have to exercise our Second Amendment rights. But why do you think, I don't know if you're watching us, if you're listening to us on radio, if you're watching us on YouTube, and people love this, the interaction with our guests between the breaks instead of the commercials. And Lord Black, maybe this will bring you down from the edge of the cliff. Lord Black made a very interesting observation. He said, why is nobody talking about what's happened in the last 2 weeks in America? The president has closed the gap with Joe Biden by 8 points. Nobody's talking about it. The violence has stopped. The courthouses aren't being burnt down anymore, and the statues aren't being attacked. Dave, isn't it more interesting that those events are not being discussed?
I do appreciate that, but I think that the Democrats in Minneapolis and Portland and Seattle will allow those people to ramp up the insurrection no matter what the result of the election is. And I'm surprised. I'm actually disappointed in the GOP. I think most of the GOP is feckless because I think they're actually uncomfortable with fighting this battle for conservatism. I think that they just think, oh, it's easier. Maybe if there's a Democrat in the White House, we'll use them as a foil and rake in more campaign contributions.
Look, you will get no disagreement from me on that last point. Yes, the establishment GOP is feckless. The lack of robust, throaty response and support of the president in the last 9 weeks, let alone the last 4 years, is absolutely absent. There's a handful of people who are fighting the good fight, and you know who they are. But the fact is, they want a quiet life. They want to be able to stay in their cushy positions. And they truly think to this day that the president of the United States, the chosen by 63 million Americans, is an anomaly, is a blip. And they're afraid that if they attach their careers to the future of this man, that somehow they will pay a price in the swamp and they will not be reelected. So you're absolutely right. But how about this, Dave? How about this scenario? How about you, everyone listening to this show, everybody watching this show, everybody who loves this country, decides today, for the next 90 days, to actually do something to get the president reelected. They volunteer, they knock on doors, they make another contribution, they go to TrumpTalk.gop, register themselves as callers for the president, and every night they spend 30 minutes, an hour, calling their fellow Americans to say, look, there's only one choice between the radicalism, the violence of the left, and stability and prosperity. And the president gets reelected, and I have this scenario for you, Dave. The president is reelected, and it is a landslide. And there is an utter psychological meltdown of the left and the DNC. Not in terms of more violence on the streets, but they have a psychological break and they collapse. And they realize that they have failed and they have to deal with the extremists in their own ranks. Do you think that possibility is completely out of the question, Dave?
I don't, Dr. Gorka, and from your mouth to God's ears, and I'll give you credit for this. I've taken the charge. I start at the GOP. I have a class tomorrow that starts at 9 a.m.
Wow.
I fortunately or unfortunately, I lost my job in April, and God called me to Twitter in May. I've reached out to people at the National Committee, and I start my service tomorrow.
Dave? That made my week. Not my day. You made my week. Stay on the line. I don't know if we've done this for you because you are a repeat caller. He gets whatever he wants, any of my books signed. I want his Twitter handle as well. We need to show appreciation. Did you listen to what that man did? He lost his job. But what's he doing? 9 a.m. tomorrow, he starts his training for the GOP to help the president get reelected. Wow. Wow, wow. Dave, you are a credit, and you are a great American, and you are showing us the way. Be more like Dave. Wow, incredible. In the meantime, every single one of you has a cell phone, I know. And if you are with one of the big carriers, you are helping the bad guys win. Yes, it is that simple. The big mobile phone companies take a portion of your bill every month and spend it on things like Democrat candidates, Planned Parenthood, gun control, open borders, you name it. Not Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is conservative. They're Christian. They take a portion of your bill and they promote the right to life, the Second Amendment, and every other thing you care about. They have an incredible, reliable, dependable, nationwide 4G LTE network. You can switch today, free activation, get a free gift, use my name, and understand you are on the side of the good guys, and they won't take your money to spend it on things that you hate. Call 972-PATRIOT. They are rated number one in America for customer service. Their team is U.S.-based. 972-PATRIOT, or just go, it's super simple, patriotmobile.com/Gorka, G-O-R-K-A. That's patriotmobile.com/Gorka. Join the good guys today. Don't wait any longer. They're a fabulous company, and I'm delighted to be associated with them.
Of America First are brought to you by Food for the Poor.
Do you know who Lawrence Jones is? Fox News. We have a little video segment for you that's rather fun, encapsulates the nature of what we have to face for the next 90 days, especially what we have to face after that if we make the wrong decision. Let's play that little video cut. Lawrence Jones, Eric, video cut 5, please.
What would you say is Joe Biden's signature accomplishment?
President Obama's right-hand man.
That's enough for you?
That's plenty.
What is one accomplishment for Joe Biden? He's been in politics for 47 years.
Yeah, I don't know what.
You don't know what?
He's a nice man. He smiles a lot. And I don't see any kind of strength. Any kind of inner strength in him to lead a nation that's in absolute mess right now.
You're a Democrat.
I'm a Democrat.
Biden is your person. He's been in office for like 47 years. What would you say is his number one accomplishment?
That the people come together.
He brings people together?
Yeah, better than, of course, than Donald Trump.
Biden is the guy.
It's unfortunate that that's all they have now.
It's unfortunate that's all they have now. Those were Democrat voters, one of them with a very strong German accent, being asked what it is about Biden that convinces them that he's the candidate after 47. That's shocking. 47 years. I say it every day on this show, but when you hear it from somebody else, 47 years in office. And his greatest accomplishment, you heard it there. He was Obama's vice president. He's a nice man. But they forgot his greatest accomplishment. How can they forget? Getting his son a $1.4 billion deal from the Communist Bank of China when he was vice president. I mean, family, isn't that family values? And then making sure that when he was still vice president, admitting it on video and joking about it, that he held $1 billion worth of U.S. aid hostage and told the Ukrainian government, if they don't fire the prosecutor investigating the company Burisma in the Ukraine that had given his son, Hunter Biden, a no-show job valued at $80,000 a month, then the U.S. government would not release the aid. Wow, that's an accomplishment, because guess what happened? He said, shucks, within 6 hours, they fired the prosecutor and the money flowed. That's Democrat family values, isn't it? A little bit different from the ones we stand for on the right. Working with communist regimes to line the pockets of your family? That's perhaps Joe Biden's biggest accomplishment. Is that the second hour done? How did that happen? Selena Zito with the truth about real America next. And then, from the Frontline Doctors Summit, Dr. Simone Gold.